I do not have any relevant financial relationships while this is loading. I have not been bribed or bought or anything. This paper involves a number of people, three of which have put this particular presentation together. My name is Jeff Jones, and I'm a professor at the University of Kentucky's College of Public Health and the National Coordinating Center for Robert Wood Johnson for Public Health Services and Systems Research. My colleague, Robin Pinley, is one of my co-authors. She is here. And our colleague, Vincent Francisco, has had some serious health issues and is unable to join us. He's at the University of North Carolina, Greensboro, but he's here in spirit. Again, I have not been bribed, no relationships. I'm going to give you a little background to this study, some of the methodology, the results, and then some of the policy implications here quickly. The objectives of this study, the first one was to collect information on governmental public health workers on how and why they entered public health and why they remained. So it was a recruitment and retention survey. That was the primary thing. If you are familiar with the data sets available to us, such as from NACHO and ASTO, we have agency-level data. It's very hard to get data on individual health workers. So to our knowledge, this is the only generalizable data set that is currently available on that. The second objective of this is to find a methodology for collecting data from governmental accessing public health workers. We use the TRAIN system, which we'll describe a little bit more. But the TRAIN system, if you're unfamiliar with it, in fact, how many of you here have ever heard of TRAIN? Raise your hand. All right, so you all know what TRAIN is, but most of you. But it's from the Public Health Foundation. It is the most widely used online training system in the U.S. The time this study was done in 2010, 22 states used it, four of which require all of their public health employees to sign up and register on TRAIN. The data set has almost 500,000 registered users, with about a third of identified as governmental public health workers. A lot of others are emergency responders. So, again, if you visualize the public health data sets that are out there, which I work with a lot of them, we have the public health agency data from ASTO, NACHO, the local board of health data from NALBO. The individual health worker data is probably the least available, the most sparse that we have. We have community indicators from the BRFIS, Behavioral Risk Factor Survey, from the Youth Risk Behavior Survey, other kinds of things. And then we have vital statistics, health outcomes. So trying to put all these together is a work in progress many people are working on. And we, with this particular study, are trying to get some of the information on the health workers on that particular side. So who put this together and when? The survey was conducted in the spring of 2010, and it was put together by the Council of Linkages between Academia and Public Health Practice, usually just called the Council on Linkages. The Council of Linkages was formed in 1992 and is supported by the CDC and HRSA, and it involves 19 national public health organizations, which are listed there. And here are their goals here on the left, if you'd like to read them and so forth. It's a good group, many people trying to work across silos to gather data and work together. So we are working on that. The methodology. This particular study, we had identified 70,315 registered TRAIN users who we could identify as governmental public health workers from their registration. We did some power calculations, and based on knowing that a lot of people would not respond to an online survey, we figured we need to get at least 3,000 people and bug them to death to get back at least a minimum of 400 respondents, so we would have a margin of error plus or minus of 5%. So the data we have back is generalizable to the population of 70,315, not the entire TRAIN data set, but those that we've identified as public health workers. We actually ended up with a final sample size of 484 respondents, and that is who I will be discussing today as the results. So these are generalizable. One thing that you should also know, however, is that we did attempt to get data from all 70,000. We did both a sample and a census. We realized going in that probably 70,000 people would not respond. We don't know why. We thought it was a great survey. We actually had over 12,000 respond. That, of course, is a too low of a response level to be generalizable for the census data. But we did get back our embedded sample data, which is generalizable. So know that the census data is there. But this is all sample, so kind of put it out of your head. Don't be confused about that. The methodology, we invited everyone to take the survey via email. That it was an online survey. We used SurveyMonkey, if you're familiar with SurveyMonkey. The selected workers received numerous, reminder emails seeking their participation and offering some incentives from the Public Health Foundation to take the survey. So they were not cash. They were some prizes and books and so forth. So they were not extravagant incentives. But we were very happy that at least we had as many people that did respond. Now to the results. As far as location, we had respondents answered from 40 of the 50 states, as well as the District of Columbia. The majority of the respondents were from the registered in the 22 states who regularly use train, so that was to be expected. 78% of the respondents reported they are female. Again, that was not surprising from what we do know of the public health workforce. The workforce is more female than male. In terms of ethnicity, 9.9% of the respondents self-identified as Hispanic, Latino, or of Spanish origin. The NACHO data, if you're familiar with that, finds that about 28% of respondents, that we had 28% of our respondents said that they were nurses. And the NACHO data tells us that nurses are the most common full-time equivalent position at local health departments. So that makes sense. We knew we would get a lot of nurses. NACHO tells us that 94% of all local health departments employ nurses and that they comprise a third of all FTEs. So that makes sense. So about a third of our respondents were nurses and about a third of FTEs at local health departments, according to NACHO, are nurses as well. Here's some more of the demographics as far as race. Here are the numbers, and then here are also the percentages here on the side. You can see it was pretty overwhelmingly white, but we did have a number of other people who did respond from other racial categories. Here are the education levels. These are somewhat interesting. These are the highest level completed when they first took their job as a public health professional, and then the highest that they are currently completed. So you can see a number of the people who started, the percentage of high school students declined because some people did go on and get their college degree of some sort as they were there. I had in some ways thought that there would be more people moving into a MPH or getting a master's degree while they had been employed, but there were not as many. You see that a MPH here, master's degree in public health, 5.9 started with that degree, and currently only 8.4% currently have that degree. So there's been some increase in education levels, but not as much as I actually expected. So the majority of people do have some type of bachelor's degree, but not in public health. Here are the work settings of the individuals who completed the survey. About 45% or 49% are at a local health department. Another 33%, almost a third, are at a state or territorial health department. 15% at a district or regional health department, less than 1% at a tribal health department, 1.5% are in a multi-state health department, very small, and then 4.3% work at some type of national public health organization. Below that, you can see the population of the jurisdiction served. Again, it's kind of across the board here from very small, under 25,000 population served by the jurisdiction, to up to over a million served, so kind of across the board there. We asked if they could estimate the size of their current organization where they work, the agency where they work, and some of them said about 1 in 10 said they just didn't know, but you can see the rest of them said some of them work in health departments with less than 25 people. About 9% said that. 6% said they work where there's 10,000 plus employees, so very large, but most of them you can see are right there in the 25 to 500 range. So some of these are still pretty large health departments that responded. Well, this is getting into the meat of the results, the recruitment factors. We did not have them rank them. We had them rate them. So for each factor, they could rate it from 0 to 10. And these are listed in the order of the highest mean rating, not ranking, but rating. And there's some interesting things that come out of here. One, Most people said that they took their job because they liked what the job did. They really liked the specific work functions were the most important thing to them. Job security was important when they took the job. Now, of course, this was taken in the middle of the recession, so the retention factors are certainly going to show that, but this was also, perhaps in some hindsight, the recession has kind of influenced their memory. Job security was the second highest rated of these. The other thing, notice here, competitive benefits outrate competitive salaries by quite a bit. So with a mean of 7.7 out of a 10-point scale for benefits versus 5 for competitive salary. So one thing you might take from this, when we started putting this together, some of our colleagues lumped these together, and we said, no, we need to separate these. And they were very surprised that benefits outrated salary. Again, these are public health workers. They put a lot of value on what they do, and so identifying with the mission of their organization, their personal commitment to public service, they wanted a job in public health field, all of these were important factors to them. So if you're designing recruitment strategies for your employees, one thing is to really play up that your work is important as a public health worker. These are people who really care about what they're doing, not just the salary. Though the benefits are important, so for sure. Here are the corresponding factors for retention. So we asked them when you began, when you started your job, why did you do it? And then we asked, why have you stayed? And now, of course, during the recession, job security is at the top. But you see still specific work functions. People enjoy what they do. That's important to them. Their commitment to public service, and again, benefits comes out here near the top. So you can see that. Now, you'll see at the bottom the ability to telecommute rated really pretty lowly. This is for the overall sample. Among younger workers, salaries and the ability to telecommute was more important. Also for younger workers, the ability to advance quickly to immediate opportunity for advancement or promotion was important. It was less important for people as they advanced in their career. So here are the retention factors. Again, similar patterns to what you saw for recruitment. So from this, what are some of the policy implications we can take from this data? We know right now that in some ways this survey was designed before the recession really kicked in. And we know now health departments are bleeding workers, having to cut positions. So this data is more for, you could say, well, maybe this is more important when you're in a position where you're needing to hire more people. We know that we keep hearing that a lot of public health workers are aging and that they will be retiring. So this is information that's important for that. The other thing is for worker morale. So some of the policy implications we'll get to. First, one of our first objectives is train as an access tool to workers. And indeed, there were limitations. We don't know how often these workers update their registration, so they may have left an agency. There are some limitations with the trained worker system. We looked into surveying the other 28 states that do not use train. The methodological problems of trying to get access to those workers was so challenging that we could not get funding for it to even attempt it. People said there's no way you can get a reliable sample. We could only get 13 states agree to allow us to do this. Some said, we'll send it to our local health department directors, and if they want to, they can send it to their workers. So train has its limitations, but it's certainly in terms of affordability and a standard means of approaching potential study participants. Train right now may be our only viable mechanism for really doing that. So that was an interesting finding we found. We also found that recruitment, retention, and morale among public health workers is really linked, again, to this identification with the job duties and their agency's mission. So if you are working with your workers trying to make morale, improve morale, and we know that when morale is high, efficiency improves, certainly saying your work's important. You know, you are really part of this community. You really make people healthier. What you do is important. In other words, really playing up this link between what they do, the mission of the agency and the organization may be very fruitful in improving worker morale and efficiency. The other thing is benefits. Certainly, a lot of places are not giving raises and have not for years because of the the budget things, but if you can tweak the benefits package, that may be something that may be more meaningful in some ways to existing workers and make them feel that, well, I haven't had a raise, but they reduced my parking fees, or they've put in a little wellness center or some place where I can get off flex time, some of these kind of things. We know that younger workers rate career advancement opportunities and the ability to telecommute higher than their older coworkers. So that may be something that if you have a young work staff or you're trying to improve benefits packages, putting in some sort of flex time, putting in some sort of ability to work from home may be something that may be desirable for them. Again, relatively few workers have increased their levels of education since joining public health agencies, but support for educational opportunities such as being able to go for job training or advancing a degree still were rated relatively highly in those factors. So at least for some people, even if they don't necessarily take advantage of it, workers who support having time off or paying in some ways or supporting people's tuition, these are all, I think, still important for a smaller subset, not the whole group, but certainly for people who do go on and advance their education things. The next steps, our original intent was to develop this for recruitment and retention, but we know that the current reality is that retaining the positions that people have is the number one strategy right now. So the Council on Linkages is actually turning its attention to how positions can be preserved and expanded under the Affordable Care Act. That will be the next way we work with this data and other data that we get. And that is kind of the quick overview of this. If you have any questions, we're going to do at the end. So thank you for coming again this morning. If you have any further questions about this that I can help with, please email me at jeff.jones@uky.edu. And thank you for having me this morning and coming.